Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Joining us once again here in studio in 1285 Avenue of the Americas in New York, glad to welcome back from Angel Oak Capital Advisors, Clayton Trick, Head of Portfolio Management for Public Strategies. We're also joined today by Leslie Falconio from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas. So, Clayton, Leslie, it's great to be with you both. Thank you for spending some time with our listeners, our clients. Leslie, let me pass it over to you to lead today's conversation.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And Clayton, it's great to have you back. I said last time, our last podcast, we had a lot of traction with that. So it's always great to hear your perspective on the markets, whether it's securitized product or the housing market. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Great to be back.
So let's sort of dig right into it. Government's reopened. Finally. Mm-hmm. Okay. But when we think about, or I should say our point of view in terms of the Chief Investment Office, right, we're expecting the Fed to cut in December. We're expecting a Fed cut the first quarter, right? Mm-hmm. But as you and I both know, we're in the process and have been in the process for quite some time of a K-shaped economy, yeah. Right? And this particularly bodes well for some, or not so well lately, for some securitized product, particularly in asset-backed securities. But when we look at our allocation, one of the most attractives that we've had for quite some time has been in the agency MBS market. And we've had that, you know, simply because A, we thought they were cheap, B, they're liquid, quasi-government guaranteed, and we know housing has been a focal point for this administration, as was previous. But I wanted to sort of get your sort of outlook, and how do you see the relative value within agency MBS or RMBS? And feel free to extend that into the opportunity set of CLOs or ABS.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, Leslie, great to be on the show again. And I completely agree at Angel Oak about, you know, with you and with the CLO's office that agency mortgages, you know, have been attractive and continue to be attractive. You know, we think they're attractive from a valuations perspective. They've been all this year and last year, so great opportunity from an all-in yield level, but also attractive given the uncertainty in the economy. I'm in the same boat as you for December. We are expecting a cut, even though the market's starting to price in a lower probability of a cut this year and lower probability of cuts, you know, into 2026. But we think the Fed is going to continue to move the front end lower. That tends to be a great environment for agency mortgages to do well in an absolute perspective, but also a relative perspective compared to other areas of high quality credit. So we completely agree with that. Outside of the mortgage-backed securities, you know, universe on the agency side, we also like non-agency mortgages as well. So those yields are attractive. You think back to, you know, 2021, early 2022, when corporate credit spreads were at somewhat similar level to they are today, we're seeing much higher yields in investment-grade non-agency mortgage bonds. I think that's a great opportunity. Outside of those, thinking of other areas of securitized credit, we do find value in some areas of CLOs, some areas of ABS. We tend to think that up in quality right now is a better trade. You go back 12 months ago, there were below investment grade areas of those markets that were cheap relative to high yield corporates. Now we see less of an attractive area there, but view that investment grade sectors across securitized for the most part actually look attractive valuations. And again, that's where we think investors should be looking right now, given the uncertainty of the economy and higher quality credit. And so those kind of match up quite well.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're in the higher quality as well. And, you know, mm-hmm. It's been an allocation that we've had for quite some time, but I still think going forward it's going to bode well just to, you know, compound that income and get that carry. You know, we also think that spreads will compress, not a material amount from where we are right now on the agency MBS side. I mean, depending if there's policy shifts, but otherwise than that, just to take that compounding income is really the tailwind to total return, we think, in 2026. But I wanted to sort of go into this. We talked about in the beginning a bit of this K-shaped economy, right? If you have the stock market, or if you own a home, you're doing very well, and you're doing well because the equity that you've built up in your home. Right. And if you don't want to go out in the mortgage rate, you have a HELOC or a line of credit that you could access if you'd like to do that. Mm-hmm. How do you see that the sort of the HELOC, if you will, that sort of part of the market in 2026? And, you know, will they exercise it? Does it keep people from moving? Like, how do you, you just explain to our listeners sort of the equity built into a home and how that sort of parlays into the consumer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the amount of equity built up in U.S. homes, $35 trillion, all-time record, double, triple the level that we had, before the great financial crisis, which also had great home price appreciation. We've not seen the run-up in borrowing in the U.S. housing market like we saw in 05 and 06, but we've seen the increase in home prices leading to this all-time record in home equity. That's really attractive from a credit perspective. There's a lot of equity cushion for mortgages and mortgage bonds. As far as the future, as you're pointing to, yeah, we think you're going to see continued growth in home equity line of credit, in second liens, especially if mortgage rates stay at this level. If you're getting a new mortgage today, it's between 5.75 and 7.5% for some mortgages like non-QM for first liens, but the average mortgage rate outstanding is still around 4%. So there is a significant amount of low coupon mortgages that exist in the marketplace. Consumers have done an incredible job of locking in low fixed rate funding when they could back in 2020 and 2021 when about half of America refinanced. And so that's been great for that high-end consumer, locking in low funding in a higher rate world. And now they can access the equity in their home through home equity line of credit, through second liens. And so we think that's only going to continue to grow. We're, in our view, only scratching the surface in that environment. Bond investors have been pretty conservative the last 10 or 15 years. And so you haven't seen the demand for those types of loans, those types of assets, because there was so much recency bias from 06 and 07. Now we're seeing a much healthier, more standardized market for actually bond creation from HELOC loans, from second liens. So we think 2026 is going to see a lot of growth in that market for a bond perspective, and also allow that higher-end consumer and middle-income consumer to access that credit. The last thing I would mention, too, is you could see a higher correlation with, if you do see an increase in or a slowdown in the economy, the demand for equity extraction from homes could also be something that drives more demand for those types of loans from borrowers next year.
Since you brought up, and that's a great explanation, but since you brought up sort of like the 06, 07 era, the pre-GFC, and when people think second liens or tapping into your HELOC, your average Joe or Jill thinks of, are they over-leveraged? Are they over-leveraging the consumer, right? So how do you kind of look at that now? Just is the consumer balance sheet's much, in a much healthier position, as we know. Mm-hmm. Is that a concern to yours at all going forward as we have these elevated mortgage rates, or say if the if the short end or the Fed fund rate stays, above that 3%, which is considered neutral? I mean, are you concerned about consumer leverage at all or no?
Not yet. Okay. What's so fascinating is the second liens and HELOCs that are being created today that are going into loan allocations or into bonds. The best factor to think about, one of the best factors in our view to think about, is the loan to value, right? So debt versus equity. In 06 and 07, if someone got a mortgage at an 80 LTV, so 80%, borrowed against, say $80,000 borrowed for a $100,000 house, and then they got a second on top of it, right? So they had really no equity cushion in 06, 07. Whereas now the average loan to value when the HELOC's being created is around 65%. So it's actually a lower loan-to-value with the second lien and the primary built together, combined LTV of 65, versus a newly created mortgage that Fannie and Freddie is guaranteeing, or a prime jumbo mortgage. Those are 75 to 80%. So the combined LTV on the HELOC is actually below newly created prime jumbo loans. So for now, the credit extension, the over-leveraging, is not in the system, but it's something to watch for. But
right,
as of now, it's the box is still pretty tight.
That's great, and I completely agree with you, by the way. But as we talk about sort of like LTVs and home prices, we have to go to an equity buildup. We have to shift over to affordability, right? So how do you – and that's the buzzword of the past couple of years, affordability, right, when it comes to the housing market. Now, I wanted to ask you just not just your thoughts on affordability, but how you see these recent demand-side sort of developments that have, been a spotlight, whether it's a 50-year mortgage or a portable. First of all, can you explain what they are, like the portable? Mm-hmm. And do you really think that this is something that could be implemented, or is the focus too much on the demand side when it should be on the supply side of the housing market?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're seeing more and more discussion of assumable portable mortgages where the individual that's selling their home that has a mortgage on that house could sell a home to a prospective, you know, first-time home buyer, and then that first-time home buyer then gets that mortgage along with it. That would be beneficial because that mortgage may have an interest rate of, you know, 3 to 4% if it was created in 2021, and that would be great for the borrower as opposed to having to get a new loan at 6 to 6.5%. So we're hearing more discussion of that, but do feel that's actually quite complicated from a legal and operational perspective. There aren't that many mortgages that are assumable right now. There are some that are assumable through certain VA and FHA programs, but it's quite limited. On the, you know, the discussion of like 40 and 50 year mortgages, I think that's going to continue to get some headlines, but we do view that it's most likely in the agency space, probably not going to be the primary answer to the affordability problem. We actually could see 30 and longer than 30 year mortgages being created, in the private label space, especially to borrowers that have an LTV on the mortgage of 40 to 50%. So huge equity cushion. We already see a lot of interest only loans to really high quality borrowers, but at like a 50 LTV. Not generically, the kind of solution for all the homeowner issues where borrowers need to really borrow 70-80% of the value of the home. I completely agree with you, Leslie, on the supply side. That seems to be the way to kind of solve more of these affordability issues at the current level of home prices, the current level of mortgage rates. Housing is unaffordable in our view, and you've seen the average age of first-time home buyers rise substantially the last decade or two, or last few years even. So I think that we're going to see more policy in D.C. around increasing the supply of homes, solving the underbuilt structure that we're in today. Post GFC, we're going to see hopefully more building of new homes, which should lead to more supply. That leads into our view that home price appreciation we think will be quite limited. This year we think home prices will end about being flat nationally, which is actually down about 2 to 3% net of inflation mm-hmm. adjusted. Probably see home prices slightly lower next year. We don't think that's going to be a big shock to the U.S. economy. I think actually getting affordability more in line in the next 6 to 12 months will be really good for first-time homebuyers, really good for growing up homeownership, and is going to create that affordability, which is probably going to be the word of the political scene the next 6 months, be a benefit there for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I mean, we agree on the HPA part for 2026. We're not expecting, we're not very negative, but more like flattish, very mm-hmm. sluggish, I would say. And, maybe the mortgage rate, this is a topic, Clayton, that we have all the time as well. If the Fed is cutting, we're assuming that mortgage rates are going to go lower, right? Yeah. But that's not necessarily the case, right? First of all, as we saw from September 24, you can cut, the back end can go higher, number one. And number mm-hmm. two, as you are well aware, it's not all about the 10-year treasury rate, right? It's about that spread that we're seeing. And some of that basis that we think, and with it between primary and secondary, we do think we'll compress in. Mm-hmm. And our probably average mortgage rate next year, 5.5, 5.75. But it's not going to be this windfall or cure-all to mm-hmm. what we're seeing right now in the affordability issue. So I agree with you that it's going to be a topic of conversation. Before we get into the privatization discussion, which we can do as well, do you think that there's rumors that the GSEs are going to buy agency MBS, or there's rumors that maybe the Fed in 2026, as they expand the balance sheet, go to agency MBS, something to get that spread lower, to get that mortgage rate down. Mm-hmm. Could you foresee any of those kind of policy shifts, or is it just chatter?
I think anything with this administration is on the table, especially if programs were utilized before. So, the Fed is effectively in their QT program, reinvesting starting in a few weeks into more treasuries. But next year, you could see them stepping in and potentially, buying more agency mortgages. I don't think that'll be the first priority that they'll be looking to do. I think they're going to be looking for other ways to get mortgage rates lower. And I think you mentioned this earlier this year, the more the Fed cuts, the less, the more that it's like the less cuts you have up front, the more the 10-year yield could stay low, the more cuts. And we've seen that play out exactly how you mentioned about 6 months ago. So we think that could lead to mortgage rates being where they are today, if not into the fives. That agency mortgage spread at this level is still really, really wide, which is causing the mortgage rate to the consumer to be high. And we think that only is going to come lower. So our call is actually for right around the same level, mid-high fives on 30-year mortgage rates. So don't think their primary goal will be or don't think the primary goal of the administration will be around trying to get the Fed to buy agency mortgages to bring rates lower, but they're going to do whatever they can to not let mortgage rates go higher.
Right.
So I think that will be the primary goal from their perspective. And you mentioned we'll get into the GSE reform, but the primary thing they talked about with GSE reform is keeping the guarantee. And so it's all about keeping mortgage rates from going higher. And we think they'll probably settle out sometime in the fives next year, which will help affordability.
So, okay, so we touched on the privatization a little bit, but let's – the relative value framework as a whole. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know you spoke a little about the CLO side, higher quality, AAA side, AAA more. And I'm just – I mean, I'm just curious because we know, you know, sometimes when sentiment can be poor, it can be poor for quite some time. We're seeing the same in the private credit sector right now, which I know necessarily is not our topic of conversation today. But, you know, some of those CLOs that we could see, not necessarily the AAA side, but, you know, can get a little bit of – they can get engulfed just in this poor sentiment, even though the fundamentals are very strong. How are you positioned for that? Or how do you see or sort of explain to the our clients and advisors when you talk about relative value, why higher quality? Why have diversification when it comes to agency and RMBS and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, diversification we think is really key right now. We've been doing that across our portfolios, and we've been recommending fixed income investors do that as well right now. When you've seen really good performance this year in the last really 18 months across kind of active fixed income, it's meant that you've had a lot of good carry, a lot of good reinvesting of income, as you mentioned last week to your to advisors. And we think that and you've also had, you've had spread tightening too. And so when that happens, it's hard to say which sector may underperform when you get volatility, right? April was a little bit more of a beta move across fixed income sectors. You had, you know, everything a little bit wider. But there are ways to get more active. I think you mentioned on the CLO side, like that could get caught up in wider spreads across areas of credit. And so we've actually been more at the micro level, investing in a lot more seasoned bonds that have a much shorter spread duration. So when spreads do potentially widen, if the equity market sells off, then you have much less price hit to that portfolio. And so there are a lot of opportunities across securitized credit than just kind of the broad indices. And part of it is being active and focusing on seasoned bonds where you're getting the same spread as a new issue security, but you're getting 20% of the volatility of the new issue security. So those things really do stick out right now, much more than they did in times like 2021 when everything was on the richer side. Now there are plenty of areas to find additional value across securitized. But we do think that being in the investment grade bonds is really important right now. You get the yields you're looking for, but you're much more insulated from a much bigger move and much more downside. And also valuations support it. The valuations in below IG, securitized versus high yield, isn't as attractive. In IG, we see it as actually very, very attractive compared to the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we completely agree with you on that. And, you know, I think there's one thing going into 2026. There's, you know, there's some unknowns that are going to be known. Like when we think about all the uncertainty regarding tariffs and what they would be, I mean, those kinds of things are known. But there's still a handful of unknowns, particularly when it comes to the global economy. You know, we, like I said, we think that the Fed cuts once in December and once in the first quarter, what we know right now, non-recessionary cuts, loose financial conditions, and open capital markets are always great tailwinds until return for fixed income. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt that and when we think of our allocation, the securitized side is definitely a bit cheaper than the corporate credit side, obviously just from the simple correlation of the equity market. Mm-hmm. But, Clayton, this has been really great. I thank you so much. It's always really great to hear your insights and your outlook. And, you know, we have a lot of people that are invested in this. So thank you for your time. And the next time I have you on, you know, I'm sure we'll have a whole different topic of discussion given as we head into 2026. But I do appreciate that and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me on again. It's been great following your views, and you've been right the last couple of years, so we agree with you, and so hopefully that continues.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.